think that the whole question of group dynamics has not been adequately examined in schools like ours. In a classroom situation where children sit rigidly in rows and work from a book and discourage what the book has to say, where the structure is so rigid that youngsters have very little interaction with each other, I think that you don't have much, you do have something, but you don't have as much in the way of group dynamics as you do in a school where there are opportunities for youngsters to react to each other, where play and human relations and group relations are considered to be part of the curriculum. But as I say, I don't think that this has been given due consideration, because I know that in my own teaching in schools like this, and I've often told this story, and this was many years ago when I first came to Little Red Schoolhouse, I taught a class where the youngsters had had several teachers that year. And this class, while no teacher had been able to be there long enough to establish any leadership, the vacuum was filled by the youngsters themselves. There was a very strong personality there among the boys, and a very tyrannical person with very strong ideas about many different things, and no child dared brook this youngster. And when I took them to music, I didn't know this until quite a while later, but if he went like this, nobody sang. And well, this was a long time ago, but still in all, we have had situations in our school where here, where underneath the surface, in areas where it was rather hard to detect, you had situations where leadership was exercised by very strong personalities operating through groups, and sometimes operating to the real hurt of some of the youngsters in the class. We had a situation in Kathy's group. When she came here, I described that. It was of several years standing, where there was a youngster who had been moved ahead. So he was chronologically a year ahead of his grade, a very, very bright boy who was bored and unhappy where he was, but intellectually very able, but yet with a great deal of immaturity in many areas of his social relationships, so that youngsters who didn't happen to like him could use these immaturities and sort of capitalize on his unpopularity to persecute him in very quiet and subtle ways. And this apparently went on for several years. And it went on to the extent that that this year there was a real serious situation, but it happened that the boy who carried on this very subtle kind of thing left the school. So it was a problem that we never resolved. But the youngster is now making his way, and these things are very subtle, because he provoked a great deal of the unpopularity in the class, and yet he never had a chance, because everything that he did, it would be taken and used as a weapon for this other youngster. And so that these human relationships in the class can be very subtle things, and we have to know what they mean and how to use them. because this is not this is nothing unusual. Our life is full of human relationships. It's full of being in groups where we're accepted and rejected, where we try to make our way, where we exercise leadership, where we learn how to subordinate our feelings to the group, so that if we can manage these situations and if we can use them and capitalize on them, these youngsters can have a head start in life with the youngsters who do not have this opportunity. But I think we need not to kid ourselves that we put a group of children together in a happy situation, and then this is all that is necessary. I thought we might just take a little time to get a picture of group patterns in different parts of the school. This isn't to organize the discussion, and as we go along we can feel our way as to where we want to focus in the way of a real problem. But I was just talking at lunch with Irene, and of course she said that in the kindergarten the kids on the playground, well, no, you can't play on my swing, and so on. There's exclusion there. There are groups, and there that this doesn't begin with the first grade. But I think we ought to see what it looks like, starting with the younger children in the elementary school, and also keeping in mind some of the qualities which youngsters show, which make them appealing to other youngsters, and so these other youngsters are drawn into these allegiances. Do you want to start out with the first grade?
Well,
east and west.
You want to start? Well, after getting your note, Norman, on this, I started thinking about it and watching for it in the class, and found that I couldn't find within the group at this point any children who I felt were real leaders in a really positive fashion, or in a negative fashion either, but that there were a lot of very strong personalities in the group that domineer the group because of their behavior. Now, before I go into the children who, because of their behavior, sort of set a tone in the group, in reading through all the reports of the children last year in kindergarten, one of my children, Daniel, was supposed to have been the leader in the 5 all-day kindergarten group last year. Should we use full name?
Yes,
this is Daniel. We call him Daniel. Daniel Miller. And according to his report, he was the most sought after child.
He has a brother and a sister
in the school. And Daniel was the most popular child, the most sought after child in the all-day kindergarten group. This was a pattern throughout the year. In the kindergarten, Daniel was not a child who did block building, was not a child who did creative work, generally speaking. Apparently, the reason for his leadership qualities in the kindergarten group was because of his vocal ability, his verbalization, he's very articulate in expressing ideas, and is a very loving, warm kind of person. After reading this, I was, and getting Norman's note, I was looking at him in relation to this year's in first grade to see if the same quality carried on in the group. And it's interesting that now that the children are engaged in academic work, where everyone has the chance to shine in these areas, that I don't feel that Daniel is a leader. He still is a very popular child. For example, today at music, we've been talking about moves before we went to music, because in the group, at over lunch, a discussion came up that Jody was the worstest child in the group. And therefore, we had to have a discussion. Jody, and I'm going to jump for a minute from Daniel to Jody. Jody is a child who is, you can hear him all over the school, and I'm sure you all think I use a ball bat every 5 minutes on Jody. He screams, he bellows, he screams, and it comes, he gets as red as a beet when anything, but anything goes wrong. This was a pattern, incidentally, all through last year in kindergarten, and it's a pattern at home.
Is he high in places? Pardon? Is this high in places?
Yes.
Yes.
Jody is not the worstest child in the group at all. And we talked about this, that no one is best and no one is worst and all, that we're all very fine people, but sometimes, you know, we don't always act like 6-year-olds in first grade and so on. This was so reassuring to Jody. Jody, who does set a tone for the whole group by his negative behavior. He's not vicious, it's not an aggression toward other children or anything. His is just a self-destruction, self-hatred. Well, that's pretty strong terms, but it's a self-tearing down that goes on within Jody. But anything that goes wrong, it's all, you know, it's Jody's fault. And Jody was so reassured that he was not, when we discussed that he was not the worstest child. Well, from this discussion, we went right to music. And in music, Edith was playing a very, it was a Swedish song, and had quite a sad mood, tone to it. And we were sitting in, as we went in, we sat in a circle, and Danny Miller, go back to Daniel now in his leadership class, Danny immediately said, "Oh, this is such a sad song." And the other children were able to pick up Daniel's mood in this music period of being perceptive. She played a fast song after this, which was not a gay song, even though it was fast, it was still a sad song, The Wayfaring Stranger. You know, which is a very, very sad song. And Daniel immediately got this. Well, the children seemed to look to him because of his, he perceived so beautifully, perceived so much more deeply than a lot of the other children, I feel, at this point in first grade, and is able to articulate his perceptions that maybe he is still a leader in first grade, as, you know, still has these leadership qualities that he had in kindergarten class that I was not aware of until now I'm talking about it. Jody, in his more negative fashion, is able to control the whole group. When Jody bellows and lets out this bellow, the whole class stops whatever it's doing, and all attention is focused on Jody.
Are these the two leaders in the group?
At this point, I would say they are. One in the negative quality, and one in the positive,
Well, I'll tell you, if we could move on now a little bit. I think the point you made is a very interesting one about a different situation where academic work comes into the picture, because I think that very often under new situations with new criteria of achievement and so on, that leadership does change, and I think this is an interesting thing to follow. Did you want to give us a picture?
Oh, I can only say in general that I feel that those sixes who are exercising some leadership, those are showing kind of more grown-up qualities, white sixes, grown-up. The kids who are every time on the playground, able to get into these old imaginative games of fun. It hasn't been army, strangely enough, but it's been more animal kind of things. Kids will want to they respond very much to a teacher saying, why that group too? Grown up. Everybody is very anxious to be grown up. That seems to be the key of the what leadership is exercised and what we as teachers can, I think, play upon. They're also very anxious to be babies and there are tears because somebody can't follow this imaginative game or is really afraid of the running around. But those who can handle the more aggressive play are the ones who might be said to be to offer the leadership of among these six-year-olds. They're not terribly aware of each other's differences. They're very warm to each other. While I worry about some kids and whether they're ready, so far as the kids concerned, they don't seem concerned with the withdrawn one or the Joe can only shake his head to them. He doesn't talk to anybody or the teacher. He kind of says yes and no. But they might be well enough, and it's toward being grown up that they seem to strive. And they,
well, I think there's an important thing to point out here that these qualities in groups go on from year to year. The reputation and the tradition from year to year builds. And where you have West first grade, where a large group, part of the group have been together, you have a more crystallized patterns of leadership, I'm sure. These children are still feeling each other out, that's right. And it would be interesting to compare the two groups from that point of view to see how different they are in that respect.
I would say from a very cursory observation of the two groups together that the group that doesn't know each other that well is... there aren't as sharp lines. There aren't as sharp friendships or as sharp dislikes or as sharp coming forward, sharp evidence of coming forward as there would be in a group that's known each other for a long time.
Let's go on to the second grade now and see what we have there.
Well, the second grade is really very interesting because it's in a kind of a transitional stage. It's got elements of kind of the way children behave at seven and younger, and elements of what are going to happen to them as they get into third and fourth and fifth grade. There are kind of three very definite groups in the class. There's one group that's still very concerned with dramatic play and very not too concerned about standards and academics. I mean, they work well, but they're not. They don't care to compete with each other academically, and they don't mind if their friend is somebody who doesn't do things too well academically. And this group is kind of led by a boy who's an extremely warm, vivacious kid, Iman, who is the father of this family. This group is all a family, and they're all involved.
In the car this morning, I was probing about these things, and they said, we have a family club.
And
a boys' club, a girls' club, and a family club.
And the other two groups are very much, and this has all kind of blossomed and gotten all very high since the beginning of the year, have started this kind of middle years peer group kind of business with, you know, boys against the girls, and very separate, very clubby. And it kind of started with the girls, and with one girl who really, I think, from what I heard from Marion last year, she was part of a group of boys most of the time with them, and this year she's very much against them, but to the point where, well, she's sort of with them too, because she calls up this one kid at night and tells her him that she loves him, and in the daytime she's writing notes to him. This is Jennifer, about how awful he is and how terrible, and they started this girls club that's all full of little notes and little pictures and making little things all the time, and very excited. And the boys sort of retaliated by forming a club, but this club is also the nucleus of something else that the boys, who are now very interested in, well, they're a group of very competitive boys who are very concerned about standards and academics and standards in sports. These are the boys who no free time, want to play kickball all the time with all the regular baseball rules, including I have to now learn all the signals that the real umpire gives. And, you know, very much the way the all-American 9-year-old boy is supposed to be, they think. And very different from this other family that still lingers in the class. And competitive boys group, however, is very, can be sort of destructive in a way, because I've noticed that they get some of their greater pleasures, in quotes, by, kind of being mean to people who they don't think are quite up to snuff, or at least saying things about them and talking among themselves about it. But on the lighter side of this is the fact that this boys' club, which formed in retaliation, had three different officers that they appointed. There was a mayor, a governor, and a spy.
It sounds some of the same qualities as gangs, doesn't it?
Yeah.
High-polluting...
Did they leave in the girls' club? Is there, did they get any point and say, she can't join, she can't be on?
Yeah, they said it, and I said that in class, anyone who wants to be can be in it. They can keep boys out if they want, but they can't keep any girls out.
Well, Joan, where does this club idea, how do you hear of all this? Is this out in the
open? Well, this one girl who loves this other boy, supposedly, told me the first day, or some other girl told me, that really it was all started because she loved this boy.
Now that I hear this, I can see how they're even masking their love interest in social studies. They were making up a song about how the George Washington Bridge married the Spuyten Duyvil Bridge.
But it's very interesting because there's so many, it's such a sharp cleavage between this two,
Well, where does the club operate?
At lunch, mostly, and I've let them, you know, pick their own seats at lunch, and this is the way they sit. The family club, the boys club, and the girls club. Three different tables, and this is where it flourishes mostly.
What happens to the first non-conformist?
Well, you know, there's a couple of people who sort of like float around between the two, but those five boys, they're always together, and they don't want to.
Now, in the situations we've had this year where there were problems around these groupings, so we always ask the question, where does this happen? Because this is the important thing. And we have had to structure certain situations where the group was harmful so that there was an actual pattern seating arrangement in lunch. And it's an interesting question because you have to know how much of this interchange is healthy and where it begins to be harmful, because we have the classic story of there's a certain boy who went all the way through this school, and in the younger groups, he was a very delightful leader. He was a helper to the teacher and so on and so forth. But when it came to the eighth grade, this quality of leadership had been allowed to develop, I'm talking about Holly now, to the point where it was really a very serious matter. And I think that... Yes, and he challenged the teacher. And there had to be some very serious situations to challenge the director. And there were some really serious situations until we got this thing straightened out.
Well, you know, this thing in my class just started about a month after school began, because this class, you know, has a reputation for being the, you know, the most delightful class of dolls in the whole school. And last year, I don't know, was there any of the beginnings of this kind of thing, Marion?
Of the club thing?
Yeah.
Now, who would you predict were the leaders last year? Who would you have predicted would be the leaders?
Well, Robbie was a leader last year. I don't know why this child was a leader. He was the most popular boy in the class, and probably one of the most withdrawn kids in the class. But was that leader. And Emile was one of the most popular children, and entirely different, with a different quality. Everyone loved Emile. He was full of mischief, and you know, I mean, he's just a good, warm human being that people responded to. And interestingly enough, Nancy Wirth, and whether this was because of her hearing, you know, and because she did have a little special attention, was one of the favorites in the class. And another favorite in the class was Melanie, which the whole class mothered.
Robbie is a leader now.
Well, he's not the undisputed leader. No, there's such a struggle for power among this group of boys. It's, you know, there's real...
Well, what are the qualities that Robbie and these other leaders... Now, Emile, we see the picture there of this family.
He's a warm father.
Yeah, but now what about the leadership in this other group?
Well, Dana and Robbie, who were the other two,
Dana's new,
but Dana is a crackerjack athlete. He's just terrific. And he's a very creative, good worker. He really is so solid, and he does very good, solid work. And he also is a clown. He also can be, it's not funny. I mean, he's almost lewd sometimes, but he can put on.
He has a lot of imitations, the sophisticated qualities. It sounds like he's been around adults a great deal, right?
Well, no, it's 7-year-old humor. It's you know, very 7-year-old dirty talk and stuff. And he can capture everybody in the class with this, but also his athletic prowess. I think this is one of the big things. And the fact that he is a very, he academically, I don't think this is quite so important to them, but the fact that he's solid there, I don't think that he would need to be as good as he is to still be the leader. But,
Freddie, must be awfully rough on Freddie.
Well, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be. But then among the girls, of course, the ones who carry on this club most are the, you know, the academically competent girls. And Nancy Wirth, as a matter of fact, she's sort of the butt of these boys. Can be very difficult because sometimes, particularly Robbie, when I think he gets a sense of security out of, saying how awful she is, you know. So that, and they kind of are always very annoyed with Nancy Wirth and Jamie, not quite.
Well, I think that we certainly get a picture here of what is beginning to happen in terms of the group solidifying around certain interests and qualities. And let's go on now to the third question.
Well, I was interested in this club idea because at one point,
one of the girls asked me something about a club, and I said, just casually, we don't allow clubs here, and that was the last I knew of them.
Oh, you're a demon.
But we have other problems. actually, as far as leadership in the class, it's very hard at this point for me to get the group dynamics because I've been fighting for the leadership of the class. So that I see post friendships.
You don't know who you're fighting, Zen. You don't know who you're fighting?
Well, not, there isn't anyone, really.
What is it in you that makes you believe?
That's what I might build up. Actually, I think the group basically is. They are looking for their own improvement of skills. They may not be conscious of it, but that's what they really are doing, so that there isn't any great movement of dynamics. There are good friends, the children who see each other after school and who seek each other out during lunchtime and like to sit together. But I haven't seen anybody this year who's a tremendous leader. Now there's Andy Fisk, for instance, who certainly has leadership qualities. He's a good athlete and very good academic worker and very bright and very verbal. He is not aggressive in his leadership. However, I've noticed that Park the last few days he brought a football and he's been able to organize a little group and he's handled a little football game very nicely, touch football. Group of about six or eight boys, and they've been able to play during a sustained period of about a half hour. So that apparently he does have very good leadership qualities. Other than that, there are, if you want to call distracting powers a kind of leadership, Drew has them. Except I think people are trying not to either be too distracted by him or, as last year I used to get complaints even from second graders where he was blamed for everything that happened on the floor. I haven't had that this year. The only time at lunchtime people will come over and say, Drew, can I change my seat? Drew is eating in a disgusting way or something like that. I haven't been able to see any real, but Claudia at one point last year, I understand, was quite a butt of ridicule and so on. The group has not, she's been very comfortable this year, I'm pleased to say. These are very positive aspects, I think, of the class. The new children who came in, two girls and one boy, the two girls were absorbed very quickly, have been doing home visiting, have been invited to parties. Claudia has mentioned being invited to visit at home, which is good. But actually, maybe I've been a tyrant and haven't allowed too much of the class dynamics, not giving them that much freedom, so that I haven't seen any kind of real leadership. I notice certain children are very popular. Little Pamela is very popular, both with the boys and the girls. Little Susan Chambers, who just came in this year, is very popular with the boys. They'll seek her out for dancing and so on. But other than that, Eric Seibel, I have to be careful of. They come to tease him, and I have to watch for that. But I just put my foot down and don't allow it so that I can't see too much of it.
I think that there has been a certain amount of constructive leadership in that group, but you had to set up the kind of a pattern where this couldn't exist. Because
Drew
certainly had all the potentialities. He's a very magnetic little boy, and you just had to make it impossible for him to.
Jonathan Herbst, who's a very bright boy, academically and a good athlete and very creative, could be, I think, destructive in a, as a leader if you don't keep him interested and absorbed enough.
What about Jane?
Well, I there took me see, last year I used to see her with Cynthia and Heidi. She seemed to have them under her thumb. But I just don't allow them to be together. Or David Coffey and Adam want to be with each other. And David has all kinds of, he's a fascinating little boy and has all kinds of adventures worked out, even to have made a chest up and shop that he's getting all ready to because he wants to run away from home. He hasn't told his mother yet. He has fascinating ideas. And has Adam.
A class project in maps.
What to take? He will work on that. Like, what to take? He and Adam are all working on it.
They are. He doesn't have asthma when he gets away from home.
But, and Adam is absolutely fascinated by David, but I've had to keep them separate. They are together outside of school. So then I'm sorry I can't give a more interesting report.
Well, I think that this is what we've had, where we've recognized this thing. We've had to give the class a kind of structure where it made it impossible for them to exercise these.
Yeah, Alan Canale too, who has many leadership qualities in many ways. I haven't allowed him to do it.
Now let's. Now what happens? You have captains, don't you?
Every day we take turns, and they don't choose teams. I just number them off. Now we play very well at park. The girls played with the boys, except for this little football game. I allowed them to choose if they wanted to play. And interestingly enough, none of the girls chose to play. But in punch bowl, kick bowl, the girls and boys play together. And relay races, and the teams, and they understand teams need to be fairly well balanced. And this too is structured. One goes to one team, one the other, and we choose all. That's how the teams arrange. Now I've tried, for instance, with a little boy like Alan, I've tried in certain ways for him to feel that he has special qualities, and he does. For instance, yesterday on the trip, he was in front. I kept Drew and Alan in front, not as because of leaving, because I needed to keep them with me. But Alan, who does a lot of subway traveling, was able to tell me and put which way to travel when we got to 14th Street, which exit to use, which train to take, and so on. And he felt very good about that. He's traveled a lot. So I've tried to find little ways where these children can shine, because academically at this point they don't. Drew and Alan don't.
Norma, may I project something here where the teacher has to strive for leadership qualities in the class? I had a parent conference this morning, one of my parents, whose child was in a different school last year, Rudolf Steiner School, and had to be removed at the end of the first term, February, because this child, the teacher just could not accept that this child had the leadership qualities of the class, and she was just falling by the wayside. This was a report from the parents, so that the teacher had to remove this child from the school so that the teacher could have the leadership qualities. I thought this was sort of funny, but this child is not in the role of leadership.
Well, may I say this, when I talk about my fighting for leadership, it hasn't been so much against a fighting against any particular other leader in the class, it's just fighting for their attention, complete attention when I want. I can't say, in a nice, sweet voice, and I have everybody's attention. Maybe two children will look at me if I'm doing it that way. I have to do all kinds of things to get the attention right. When we're working on it, I think it's going to improve and has improved. I think it's been more self-absorption on their part, because it might be almost anything they're So everybody's smiling.
What about lunchtime? Do they sit, do they choose their associates at lunch?
More or less, I'm allowed.
What happens?
We have a certain order. Well, certain children like to sit together. It's been mostly Adam and David. Though even that I've structured so that each day a different row gets ready first to get online. We take turns. And then we have to fill up one long table and then the other. And apparently, Alva last year spoke to them about changing seats. And it's good to change seats and sit with others because that doesn't seem hard for them to understand.
And this is carried on.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Certain people definitely don't want to sit near each other. This is interesting. Carrie never wants to be near Drew. Yet he's fascinated by Drew, but apparently he knows that things happen. So he says, I can't sit near Drew, which is good.
Or else his mother's told him.
Yeah, well, of course, it isn't good for Drew to hear this. He says this out loud, and I can't sit next to Drew. But it's true, he can't.
Could we go on to fourth grade?
Okay. In my class, I think I find all the time that attitudes, and particularly negative ones, are very contagious. And if something is presented in a most attractive way, with your eye on, my eye on, the one whom I think will lead this through, and if I'm successful in picking the right one or ones, and appealing just right, the idea may go over. Otherwise, I'm doomed. And there's a good deal of informal clubbiness, particularly among the girls, although the boys are picking it up too, and it usually has fairly negative purposes. We had a really rough start, I think, on the playground, which has improved a great deal since we started a system of two people choosing teams and activities for a week at a time, and the activity changes daily, teams change weekly, and it's been much less of the nyan-nyan attitude on the playground, and the idea that that's not fair. They seem terribly aware of whether something is fair or not, or they're quick to jump to conclusions one way or the other and have a terrible argument about it. They're very quick to pick up the ganging up kind of attitude on one or two people, and this is particularly aimed at Janet and Jeff. Janet, I think, is known all over the whole floor, at least.
Yes.
Third grade children particularly know her, and Mildred said when they first arrived this year, she heard several of them say, oh yeah, there's Janet, right away. Jeff is new and having quite a struggle to feel that he fits in the group. He does quite well if he's with one other child and they're doing something that he's interested in, science particularly. But he's having an awful time to keep from the very loud, guttural, low in the voice laughing and so on, which sets everybody off. And a lot of children have really turned against him hard because of this, and he's having a hard time to climb back up the ladder. Getting attention for negative things is very contagious too. And a lot of children seem to take initiative in getting attention. Somebody will decide whether we should laugh at something that somebody said under his breath or something and go, and it'll set up a whole string. Suddenly everybody thinks it's terribly funny when somebody, and it just took one person to decide that.
Which one person, or is it changeable?
It's pretty changeable.
What role does David Miller play?
David Miller first had a very positive leadership in most pleasant thing in the classroom, as well as on the...
Maybe you better describe his qualities a little
yes.
bit too, so we get to...
Then he had a spell of being very negative, and I know that I made one bad mistake with him, which his father helped me to see through and work out, and with much better sense, he's had a much better attitude. David is by quite a bit the quickest one in the class. His work is not of the top quality. It could be if he could stick to it hard enough. He and Richard Peterson are great chums. And Richard works quickly enough, but slowly enough to still be accurate, and David wants to be done. David has to be the top man. And David is also, by the way, the brother of
Daniel,
Jerome, and Julie, and Fifka.
All three of them leaders of the sort.
Yes. I guess David is in great competition with his sister all the time, from what little of you have to understand. David answers questions all the time. He's right there, he's with you all the time. He
also challenges.
Yeah. That's true.
And so does Daniel, age 6.
Which is all right if their attitude is right at the moment. If they're trying to dig underground, then it's not up.
David has, during his more negative period, which I made my bad mistake with, which I'll describe in a minute, he lost ground with the other children and became very unpopular in the playground, which I was surprised about in a way, but what he did was not surprising him. He'd get the ball. He had to have the ball, and he couldn't let anybody else have it. And every time he got it, he had to throw it. He couldn't share it with anyone else, and this sort of thing. And there came many, many complaints from children. David's got the ball, and he always has it, and he never lets anyone else have it. And after my discussion with his father, we worked this out much better. His attitude has changed completely, for the most part. And he feels much happier about it, obviously, and is much happier about other things. My mistake with him was, when scolding him, I touched him and held him firmly by the shoulders or something, and he was so sensitive about this that this hurt him. He just couldn't stand to be touched. My purpose in doing it was to hold his attention, so he wasn't looking somewhere else while I was talking to him. And it's worked beautifully with most of the children I ever did it with, and it never occurred to me that this would happen. Well, his father was pretty upset about it, and my father was upset too. And so I just have been careful to be hands off, and ever since then it's really changed quite a bit. I'm amazed that it has changed so.
I wonder why he can't touch.
Why he does this? So, as soon as you, sometimes I will put my try to put my hand on my shoulder, on his shoulder, when we're having a discussion, because in art he's quite advanced, and at the moment extremely frustrated. He's where some of the 12, 13-year-old children are, and he won't accept this. He wants to pull back.
Yeah. Just pull
he has some kind of a block that's been growing and developing, which. Maybe, you know, some attention beyond our ability to help him, but I see something happening there, and a frustration within him, and yet he won't let himself, you know, come close to anybody.
Will he touch other children?
He works out with hands in his pockets.
He does that sometimes, but if someone, particularly Jack, but sometimes others, they come near him, and if somebody else strikes out first, this is a worst group I ever saw for the playing, I got to last. Touch and you get out of here, and it's immediately hands up in the air and fist fight at almost any provocation.
But
then
doesn't do it to tickle or pinch or something.
Or just hold.
He did that when he was younger, just to tickle, fool around. But
he was much more like Daddy when he was younger.
No. His whole background was one, he was one of the most unhappy children throughout his whole nursery.
Now that's quite a history there on relationships with his older sister.
And first grade was the first time that this child was happy in school, because here he was able in his academics to really, you know, really feel pretty good about himself. But children were afraid of him in the nursery school. He was one of them feared.
Well, this was true first and second grade.
And in first grade also, he was so a very strong child, and was also a child. When he was in first grade, he had Danny and Dave and I had an excellent relationship, but never a hand-to-hand relationship. It was purely intellectual relationship, nothing physical about it. So. Whereas the other two children in this family, Julie is a very physical children. And Danny, you can't talk to Danny unless he's sort of up under your shirt and on your lap. I mean, he's a very, you know, he just melts into you. It's interesting in one family.
Now, you see, with David and playground rules, I could see where his father spoke to him about as being fair. Now, this to David is very important, that he must be fair. So that after he thinks it over and shown to him that he was selfish and not being a good sport, he will come around.
Well, to get back to our group pattern, is David, David is one of the outstanding leaders, isn't he? Who would be some of the others?
Richard Peterson in academic areas, and children look to him as one who knows and one who's wise and one who is fair. And I heard he said directly to me, with everybody listening one day, I think I could decide that. I'm pretty fair, and I think everybody else thinks I am, too. There's no question about that.
He's the Peter Bruce Rosenblum of the school, because I think that this is the position that Peter had.
And who are some of the others? What about the girls?
The girls? The girls are in two camps.
They
There are four. Elissa, June, and Susanna, who are very nice friends, and Marion, who would like to be.
Now, what are some of the interests of that group?
Anything
baby. Girly.
Well, they guess.
I can see that's why I'm mixing in here,
because this is okay. Well, they could do creative writing.
Yeah.
They're very interested in working well in their academics.
Yeah.
This is their all work.
This is
their all work, too.
The
they're sincere and serious. And
yes,
they can be silly, which is okay.
Yeah.
And what's the other group like?
And the other one is Laverne and Elizabeth, who are a bit slow. Elizabeth is quite slow. And Janet, who works in there, pretty much, she tries awfully hard. She makes them furious sometimes, but she gets in somehow, too. And Marion, who would like to be part of that group, too. Marion just doesn't fit. And she brings it on by just tantrums of hate every now and then. And they just can't take it.
Where do you find
one other girl who is Lynn, who is a bit strange, has some hearing difficulty, I think, and is a bit slow to react, very clumsy physically, but who does excellent academic work. And she spends most of her time with Jonathan, who is also
these qualities show themselves? Playground? I mean, where does the groupness come out? Or lunchtime? Where does this manifest
itself? Playground very much. Uh-huh. During free times there. We have a morning recess now when they play games for a few minutes, and that's completely free. The groups show up there. Very much in the girls. The boys' groups change a good deal, except David and Richard together, but the rest of them change a good deal. But in the girls' much more fixed in with Johnson and
Lynn. I think something's interesting there about Laverne. Laverne was very much in with Susanna, Alyssa, and June last year. Then she started gravitating toward Elizabeth. This came out through home visits. She was, Laverne was very popular with all the girls. And it's a problem.
I think she
is now.
Still spends most of the time.
I'd just like to call attention to one thing here. We won't be able to go on much further tonight, but something that I think we have to recognize as a background for all of these youngsters. And I'll pose it against the extreme of my own background. There were 9 brothers and sisters on a farm. On Saturdays and Sundays, a gang of boys would come. We'd go swimming in gangs together. We'd run through the woods and so on. Now, this is the old rural kind of thing, not idyllic by any means, because I could, you know, if you looked at these relationships and so on, you'd see a lot of things there that weren't good. But yet, these youngsters are almost units, except for their life here at school. The city does not allow them to, there's very little street play, a lot of children playing together on the street, organizing themselves. Very little chance for the spontaneous making of groups and breaking of groups and all of that. Very small families, sometimes only children or 2 children. And the school is the only time that they have to relate to each other. And so that I think this accounts a lot for some of the tensions that occur between children and the needs that they have to have friends and to relate to each other, and perhaps some of the frenzy of exclusion it accounts for too. But I think that that these are some of the backgrounds that we have to look at in relation to this whole thing and see what it is that we're dealing with.
This is so true with a child like Marion, who's an only child, lives in a big apartment house, but there are no other children there.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother and father are both very busy people, and the mother a rather cold person.
Both writers.
Yes, and very busy.
And then he has to work on the New York Times with that.
Marion is really just frantic for friends.
This has been her pattern too, right through from the first grade on. And it's interesting with Lynn and Jonathan. Here are these 2 children in first grade who were low men on the totem pole, so to speak, friendship-wise. Jonathan, who was terribly full of fears and was new to our school. Lynn, who came in with a real speech impediment. And they were married, in first grade.
Maybe that's a solution. Early marriages.
And it's interesting that they're still, now in fourth grade, that there's still, that they still have these needs.
It's a sort of a brother and sister relationship.
Well, it's also a defense mechanism, because they are chosen.
Yeah.
I observed this last week in art, once again, where they had the freedom of choosing someone to work with on a 2-man mural. And at the end of it, there they were. And so they said to each other, well, let's work together. And it was a nice feeling. They didn't feel let down. At least it didn't show. But then there was Janet, who had not been chosen. And so I had to add her to a group with Marion and Elizabeth. And Marion was as poisonous as you could imagine. But never when I was around, as soon as my back was turned. And then I'd see Janet almost in tears. And she is sometimes guilty on her own of returning some of this poisonous language and attitude. But once again, she was a left out person at that point.
And she's the one who gets the butt of all the stuff. In fact, among the boys right now, there's a terrific clique of against Janet-ness. In fact, we're having a series of shots now. If Janet comes around, I get a shot to protect myself from her. Give me a shot.
Oh.
And this has, in the last few days, this has become very strong. She tends not to notice, but she should.
How do you handle this smart, but.
I don't know.
Well, she provokes a lot. She provokes.
She provokes it, that's it. She hasn't had a chance, but she provokes it.
Well, yeah.
It's a vicious song?
If, yeah, this is the kind of thing, you know, this other situation with Danny Conrad, you know, he provoked a lot, he almost pathologically in bringing it on himself, and yet at the same time, he could never break out of this circle. I think that Janet is, though. I think that Janet's general behavior over the year so far has improved. And I think...
Yes, it has. I think my behavior with her has improved.
But I think that, and this is of course, the first time we've begun to say, well, what do you do in specific situations? But...
I did something last year. I told Margaret about this incident in relation to Mary and the three girls, June and Alyssa and Susanna. I took the three of them aside one day when Marion was really miserable, going through a terrible stage at home and in school. You could just see she was being eaten up with envy. She would flare up at the slightest provocation. I asked them to really be kind to her and explain that all this behavior showed that she was really unhappy and so on. And they did try, and it did help.
Well, I think that there are a number of things can be done.
Yes.
I think in this raw situation of taking these shots, I think that there are times when you just say, this has to stop.
Yes.
And I think that you don't have to hold up the individual situation or hold up the individual child, but you can say that this is as destructive as if they took
a lynching.
Yes, or took something and threw it at somebody, and that this has to stop. That any more of this, and the person who perpetrates it, you're going to call their parents in, you're going to describe this behavior to them, and let them know what this child has been doing. And I think that this is a way you have to handle this kind of thing. But I think that as far as Janet is concerned, there's another thing too, that I think that we have to find ways of finding something to do in which youngsters can use what they have. And I think that we have to look and see where it is. Maybe it's in art, maybe we have to develop some sort of an activity which will bring a few children together and bring qualities out in youngsters that we find that they have.
It worked in the fifth grade with a few
youngsters.
Yeah.
Last year with Richard, this same approach that we had.
You know, it's interesting when you meet Janet in the hall, those of us who never had, I know I never had her at all. And I get the feeling, and I didn't know that the situation was this bad, that I always get the feeling when I meet her in the hall, she smiles and she wants recognition and affection. And I always go out of my way to, you know, speak to her and all. And I'm wondering with kids like this, they obviously need to succeed and help build up. There must, as Norman says, there must be something, some way of reaching, but there must be something positive there that can be...
Well, there is in Janet.
Yeah, I don't know her. But where you can build her up to herself as well as to the...
And then there's another process that has to go on here, that because she is... every time she brings this upon herself, she convinces herself anew that the world is against her. And I think that you have to have the time to sit down and say, now look, you did this, this is why this person did this. What they did wasn't good, but you have to learn not to do this thing too, and that they come to understand the consequences of their own behavior. Because I think that whenever Janet brought this upon herself, or when these things happen, then her feeling is, well, everybody's against her, and can't. Well, it's time is up now. Shall we go on and put the older classes next time?
It's interesting, these teachers who have been here for a while, to see the change in these children and what's happened.
Is there